Our next case is Christopher Michael Hernandez versus the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, 2025-1301. Mrs. Petek.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Today we're here to discuss the use of 38 U.S.C. 5107B versus the 803-4 rule of evidence, federal rule of evidence. Under the non-adversarial Veterans Court schema, all competent evidence must be weighed under 5107B.
Counsel, am I correct that you're not basically arguing the denial of service connection because that's based on facts over which we have no jurisdiction? Your appeal is basically limited to the reference to the rule of evidence.
That's correct, Your Honor. We're not here to, go over the credibility of Mr. Hernandez. We're here to discuss how that federal rule of evidence was basically used before the benefit of the doubt, which is part of the VA non-adversarial process, was used improperly
And why was that improper?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but under the federal rules of evidence, the rule 803-4 is used as a rule of admissibility for the trustworthiness of somebody's their testimony when they are discussing healthcare with a healthcare provider, and that there's a trustworthiness. Here, we feel that the board and the VA used this rule as a weighing and not a a weighing of the evidence and not as an admissibility rule. And so we believe that was an improper adoption of that standard in order to give more weight to testimony given to a healthcare provider versus the lay statements from the veteran.
But you think in the absence of giving it more weight, that this brings you under the B clause where there's essentially the facts are in equipoise?
Right.
And, the benefit of the doubt rule would apply?
Yeah, that's correct. With the VA, the benefit of the doubt rule would, all things being equal, give the veteran the benefit of the doubt in terms of what evidence would be used to.
So what was the evidence on the veteran side?
There were lay statements and then also independently provided medical opinion. And part of the analysis from the board was that Mr. Hernandez's credibility was used against him in determining whether his lay statement and also his statements to the independent medical provider were credible, and that they gave more weight under this 803-4 standard to the statements given to the healthcare providers.
And all of these issues went to, because there was a large span of time between his exit from service.
Yes, that's
and complaint. So all of those issues went to whether in the interim he had demonstrated
correct.
That he had titanius and the other.
Yeah, and pardon me as I make the time span is correct. Under existing case law, that time span should not necessarily be used against the veteran, because they're, I'm trying to find the case.
Well, I know you're not supposed to use the absence of evidence.
Right, that's correct.
The same thing as saying he left the service in 20 years earlier.
Correct,
and there was no, and 20 years passed, and hypothetically, and there's no indication that the person ever went to a doctor or complained of those kinds of symptoms. And the first time he goes to the doctor is 20 years after he's left service. You can't consider that?
You can, and we're not here to consider the facts of, you know, what happened below, but in Mr. Hernandez's case specifically, there were records that were requested from several different medical providers that were later returned, the request was returned with acknowledgement that those records had been purged because it had been in a certain amount of time that the medical center had destroyed those records because they were no longer kept by the facility. So there is the possibility that that evidence would exist if it hadn't been purged by the medical facility. And here, we believe that, you know, his lay statements that these symptoms were occurring during that period of time where we have the absence of evidence were weighed less than the statements made by the healthcare providers for the records that they did have under this rule 8034. So you're basically weighing the evidence before you even get to the benefit of the doubt standard.
In terms of what the, so you would agree that this court can only review rules of law, right?
Correct.
Okay. So we cannot review the Veterans Court's determination that any error by the, you know, that had been taken place was prejudicial or not, right?
Right.
Okay. So then in terms of what the rule of law is, the Veterans Court said that the legal principle is that when people need medical care, they have great incentive to tell the truth.
Right.
And then it referred to the notes to Rule of Evidence 8034.
Right.
So it didn't seem like it was applying some kind of rule of evidence. It was the legal principle, if you can even call it that, was just that when people need medical care, they have great incentive to tell the truth.
Yeah, and thank you for the question. I don't think we disagree with that premise necessarily, but we feel that there was an improper standard created with the court using a rule of evidence that is really just based on a hearsay exception, that they're actually using that that rule as a tool to weigh the evidence of professional medical providers over the lay statements of, say, the veteran.
I don't understand your answer. I thought you started by saying, and maybe you didn't need to say it, that you agree with the principle. So if they hadn't tagged it with federal rule, whatever, and they had just, in discussing the evidence, say, and he gave this to the medical provider, and we think that, then that would have been okay?
No, and I'm sorry for the misunderstanding. And under the federal rules of evidence, those things should be admissible because there's more trustworthiness. But we don't think that it should carry more weight on the outset, because you're basically turning that hearsay exception into a rule that allows the board to treat professional medical providers versus lay statements or independent medical opinions with more importance. We don't feel that that's really under the spirit of the hearsay exception.
I know
exception.
The statute requires that you consider all medical
right.
and lay evidence, but do you think it would be error for a panel of board or the CAVC to place more emphasis and more reliability on medical evidence than on lay statements? Would that be error?
Not necessarily. In this case, I don't think that they arrived at that position in the correct way because they were basically giving those statements more trustworthiness before they even got to the credibility issue of Mr. Hernandez, and it was sort of a pass-through in order to impugn his credibility. What we're asking the court here is to vacate and remand in order for that analysis to be done properly. Even at the board, they did not make any reference to the federal rules of evidence. They actually cited to Rucker, which the court, in its decision, said that it was used improperly and then basically told told us what the board meant, which we thought was not necessarily right, that they should have remanded it and said, you know, why don't we reanalyze this in the correct way?
It was harmless error. Are you challenging that ruling here?
Could you repeat
that? Concluded it was harmless error because, in fact, the predicate or the principle that the board mistakenly took out of that case was the principle they relied on. So I didn't see that as being a basis for a challenge here.
We think it's a harmless error, again, because they're putting their thumb on the scales earlier in the process before the benefit of the doubt. And so we don't know what the board would decide if they had properly explained why the professional medical statements were more persuasive and more probative. They just basically assign that rule to those statements without that discussion about why they were more probative.
And to be clear, your qualm with the Veterans Court is that they said categorically, when people need medical care, they have great incentive to tell the truth. Mm-hmm. That should not be a standard, a categorical standard that should be applied in these cases. Is that fair?
Correct. We believe that that would turn the idea of the benefit of the doubt and the non-adversarial process on its head, and that this weighing that you're giving benefits or benefit of the doubt is basically null and void, because you're telling veterans that if there's a professional medical opinion, it's going to have more importance, more weight on the outset than anything that you can provide that might be, in your favor versus the opinion that might not be in your favor. Are there any more questions?
Apparently not. You didn't wish to save any rebuttal time, but you have 3 unused minutes, so you can change your mind after the appellee's.
Appreciate it. If I don't come back, I would just respectfully ask the court to vacate and remand this case so that it can be determined by the court and the board. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Jordan.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. This Court should affirm the decision of the Veterans Court because the Veterans Court did not commit legal error in concluding that the Board could look to the principle that statements made in the course of seeking medical treatment may be deemed more trustworthy than statements made in other contexts when deciding how to weigh evidence and when answering the question of whether Mr. Hernandez's tinnitus, eye condition, and headaches were service-connected. And so, as my colleague clarified, the principle at issue here is whether when people need medical care, they have great incentive to tell the truth. Is that a valid legal principle that the board can look to when it weighs the evidence? And it is. And in fact, the board explained its evidentiary weight and credibility determinations as it should, as it's supposed to do. The board explained why it looked to statements that Mr. Hernandez made in 2017 in seeking treatment in terms of the service connection inquiry. It explained inconsistent statements. It looked at his VA questionnaire. It looked at his service record in the 80s.
In terms of what this court can review, you would agree that this court can review whether that principle, when people need medical care, they have great incentive to tell the truth, whether that's valid or not. Is that fair?
Whether that's valid and whether the board and Veterans Court could look to that, and they could. In our brief on pages 14 through 15, we cite numerous cases from this court, the Supreme Court, and other circuits where they affirm that principle. And FRE 803, it is a part of the federal rules of evidence.
As a rule of law, as a general principle that applies in all cases, because that's what a rule of law is, why isn't it just wrong? Because there are numerous situations where when people are seeking medical care, they do not have incentive to tell the truth. Just one example is when people have, for instance, drug-seeking behavior. They have an incentive not to tell the truth in order to get the drugs that they are seeking from medical providers. That's just one example. Another example could be where people want a doctor to take them seriously, so they complain about the immediacy of the condition, as opposed to it might have been happening for a long time, but because they want urgent medical care, they might say that this thing just happened recently. So it's not always the case. And so I think the other side is saying, as a rule of law, and you conceded that that's what it is, it's improper. It might be okay to apply it in certain circumstances where it comes up and where it's relevant, but it shouldn't be a categorical rule. What's your response?
I would disagree that this principle is categorical. I think the word incentive is very clear there. It's underlying the hearsay exceptions. There's rationales and there's logic to why those hearsay exceptions exist. And they're not categorical in nature. It's explaining why does this rule exist and what is the general legal principle, and it's something to consider, and it's an explanation offered as to why the board found this particular piece of evidence, among all the evidence considered, way more than, say, lay statements. And
so if that's true, then why does this court have authority to address the validity of that weighing mechanism, or that is my basic question is, why is this a rule of law that this court would be able to review?
So my understanding from my colleague's presentation is that relying on something contained in the federal rule of evidence is a legal error because it exists in the federal rule of evidence, and that is the legal issue. And what I'm offering is that the principle that statements made seeking medical care offers some degree of trustworthiness is something that the fact finder can look to say, this is why I find this particular evidence more persuasive than other kinds of evidence, when it's reasoning and explaining why it made its certain determinations.
My colleague makes very good points in terms of coming up with hypotheticals where that principle would not be applicable necessarily. So we shouldn't be talking about an absolute principle that would apply in all circumstances. But in reviewing this case, the challenges to the use of that principle in this case. And in this case, you want to clarify or whatever. I mean, the assumption that the principle would work in this case, I think the CAVC's assumption, is that he's going to a doctor and he wants to get treated. And if he has a headache or titanius, he's going to tell the doctor the truth about how long the symptoms. There's been no suggestion from the other side that he would have been hiding the ball. Has there been?
That's correct. In going to seek treatment for a pain that one is having, which is the particular scenario we have, the incentive is to try and deliver as much information to the care provider so that that ailment can be remedied. And so that's the particular circumstance we have here.
If in another case it comes up under the very good hypotheticals that seem quite real, if a drug addict is trying to hide his drug behavior, or if somebody put up the rules of evidence, someone else would, the other side would likely come up and say, well, that may be a principle that you generally apply, but it's not applicable in this circumstances because, and one would assume they might carry the day on that basis, correct?
Correct. And I think we're looking at all the evidence here, and I can imagine other scenarios where there's a conspiracy to defraud healthcare reimbursements where somebody could have some sort of incentive to not. I mean, one can think of all these kinds of examples where
But the board would be required to consider the rebuttal to why that principle should, why they shouldn't give weight to those statements. That's part of the adjudication here.
Correct. And what we argue in our brief is that the board and the Veterans Court did not apply a per se rule. And so they make issue of Buchanan, where there was this issue of medical opinions are always more trustworthy or they are paramount and it's a per se rule. And that's not what the board did.
The other underlying thing we're talking about here is this benefit of the doubt rule, and whether it would apply in this, should apply in this circumstance. Just so you want to comment on that?
Yeah, so the benefit of the doubt rule does apply. I believe my colleague may have misarticulated exactly how it applies here. First, all the evidence is considered. And so I'll mention the idea of admission doesn't even make sense. All the evidence was considered here. And that at the end of the day, the board needs to look at and says, okay, this evidence is his lay statements. This is his service connection or service records in the 80s. It weighed all that evidence. Where does everything come out? At the end of the day, they said it is unlikely that these three conditions are service connected. Now, under the benefit of the doubt rule, when it is unclear, unsure. It's 50-50 under Ortiz and under the benefit of doubt rule of 5107. Then the veteran would get the benefits, unlike the preponderance of the evidence standard in most civil cases, where the movant has the burden to show just above that 50% or to meet that persuasiveness threshold. But that threshold wasn't even satisfied because all the evidence considered didn't persuade, and it didn't show that service connection was likelihood. And so it's not an applicable principle, and there's no error of law in how the Veterans Court applied that principle here. So I think as I mentioned earlier, the central premise of Mr. Hernandez's appeal rests on the idea that there was a per se or categorical rule that was adopted, and that's simply not the case. The Veterans Court was affirming the board's explanation of why it weighed certain evidence the way it did. The board's decision, I thought, was very well written, explained its reasoning. The Veterans Court applied a clear error rule or a clear error review of those findings. And so with that, this court doesn't have jurisdiction to review that clear error findings. And the small legal principle offered is simply not an error of law regarding the application of this general principle to this case. I know Mr. Hernandez made some other arguments in his brief. I think we explained those. I'm happy to address those or any other questions the panel may have in my remaining time.
Apparently not.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Edek, do you have any thoughts? Case is submitted. Thank you to both counsel.